released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps potassium iodate gives you virtually complete protection from the most feared consequence of a nuclear accident, radioactive poisoning. Potassium iodate can protect against radioactive poisoning by filling the thyroid with good iodine. This shields the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radioactive iodine. Potassium iodate is better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and save $5 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Call now and get...
Are we coming through? Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And then I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Patrick Wood of August Review, who, of course, been at this battle as almost as long as I have. I had actually at work very closely with Professor Tony Sutton back in the late 1970s, Patrick?
Yes, it was, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you just go ahead and you pick up the story and give us your impression of what's happening financially, because I think this is one of the greatest dangers of the survival of our country.
Well, it really is, Dr. Stan. And as you mentioned, Tony Sutton and I did work together, collaborated on researching and writing about the global elite back then through the eyes of the Trilateral Commission, which was one of the recently formed groups back then that was dedicated to creating a new economic world order. It's important to understand that from a historical point of view so that we can see now that the policies that these people set forth starting in 1973 are the policies that are coming to full fruition today. And their desire to create a new international economic order that was skewed to their benefit, not ours. We see this in virtually every area of global economy. We see it in every industry. We see it in the financial industry. We see it in agriculture. We see it in energy. And everybody today is, any citizen in our country for sure is screaming upset about energy prices. They're screaming upset about food prices. And we haven't seen anything yet. And these things are the result of failed policies, not failed from the standpoint of the likes of the Trilateral Commission. They've been very successful from their standpoint, but as far as our national policies that we used to have that protected us from stuff like this and from people like this, those policies have totally failed, and we find ourselves in crises after crises after crises. And people shouldn't be so surprised if they understand if they understood the historical significance of what's happening. They go, yes, it makes perfect sense. And that's kind of what I'm about today, and I know you are as well, is trying to help people make sense out of what's going on in the world. These are not random things that are happening. It's just, oh gosh, too bad it rained today and flooded out the bridge. It's not like that. These are not just, in that sense, like a stroke of nature, or something that just couldn't be helped. These are policies that were actually set forth 30, 35 years ago that are coming full circle on us, and now we're starting to feel the pinch.
Well, now, of course, you're talking about what's happening as far as our production, the fact that the American production has been cut back. Or are you talking certainly about what's happening to the value of the dollar? You know, and the fact that we have an inflationary spiral here that's really unparalleled at any time that I can remember in the past. Or the skyrocketing prices of oil. Which specific things are you referring to?
Well, Dr. Stan, it's just, it's the whole system. The whole economic system works together. It's not a, it's not merely a sum of the parts. It is all the parts. They're all intertwined with each other. So you can't look at any area of the world economy today and not see it with all the other industries blended in with it as well. Our economy has, in this country, our economy has been globalized in the sense that we're so intertwined with other countries today, we cannot exist on our own anymore. If we were, for instance, to shut down our shipping ports right now, we would find out within about 2 months that we're not...
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is, of course, Patrick Wood, and Patrick comes from the August Review, and Pat has simply been at this for as long as I have, one of my favorite guests. He's talking about, of course, how we are no longer a sovereign nation as far as trade is concerned. Everything is interconnected. We're dependent upon other countries for our oil, or we're increasingly dependent upon other countries for our food. We used to be a major food exporter, and we still export a lot of food, but we import a lot of food from other countries as well. And so many of our manufactured goods are manufactured by American corporations over in China. And, of course, suddenly we see an inflationary spiral unparalleled, certainly in existence any time during my almost 80 years of life. And then, of course, we're beginning to see the rising price of oil that very, very soon is going to make it extremely difficult to exist as an industrialized society. We see the planned rise of electricity, and of course many people, you know, are going to have to choose between being warm in the winter and using heating oil, or electricity in the summer and using air conditioning, because they're not going to have enough money for this. And I believe there's a planned program to lower the living standards of the American people that's been around for a long time. But, of course, we couldn't let the American people know that, because they might, of course, then rise up in their righteous indignation and try to get people who believe in America in government rather than the globalists. You pick the story up there, Patrick.
Well, that's true. This is also being played out in virtually every other country in the world, especially agricultural countries to the south of us and in Africa, where they still basically have an agrarian economy. The global elite, and I want to kind of just kind of harp on this agricultural business, because, you know, there are riots going on around the world today because of rising food prices. You know, the common people don't understand hardly what's going on, but there's a huge crisis going on right now, economic, and it's just a human crisis, because food prices have risen so much in the last year and a half.
And of course, you know, these riots are growing. We never see them on television. What do we see? Oh, my goodness, look what's happening in hockey. Look at what's happening, in basketball. And remember, the NFL season's coming up soon. And then there's Britney Spears and of course, Paris Hilton and all of these things. So they focus our attention on the unimportant things, while the major events of the world slip by, and most Americans are totally unaware. Would you go ahead there?
Well, that's right. And I haven't seen one of these, personally, I haven't seen one of these riots outside of a newspaper or an internet article. I haven't seen one news station on the TV, show pictures of people rioting over food.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We bring our stations back on, Patrick. So Patrick was just saying that the people are rioting throughout the world for food, but no, we're not seeing this on television. They create our reality. Perception has very little to do with reality. They create our perception, and of course we believe what we see on television, and if they don't show us the riots, why, they don't occur. Go right ahead, Patrick.
Exactly. So, well, the reason that food prices are shockingly rising around the world right now, it's not just a supply and demand issue, as many would have you believe, but it's the result of long-term manipulation of the agricultural market. And in the last 15 years, for instance, Dr. Stan, there's been a great consolidation in the distribution of agricultural products globally. There are now six companies in the world, they're global companies, that control like 80%+ of the food production that moves around the world. In other words, these companies buy crops from farmers, and then they're responsible for distributing and selling those products to consumers, grocery stores, and so on around the world. And they do. But it's to the point now where it is not a competitive market anymore. They control these markets with an iron fist.
You're really speaking then of a cartel, but of course... But who are you going to report it to? The government's working hand in glove with these cartels, whether it's in oil or whether it's, of course, in food or the other things, or the other commodities. But they can't let the American people know that, so go right ahead.
Well, that's exactly right. They have not, and most people are just completely unaware that this consolidation has taken place. The reason that they've been able to use governments to their advantage is that they have been like established like a revolving door between their top personnel and leadership positions in various governments around the world, so that they can get the governments to do what they want to do. Secondly, these companies, not just the distribution companies like ADM and ConAgra and so on, but the agricultural interest, if you will, who have been pursuing the control of food, by the way, since 1973, they have used the auspices, for instance, of the World Bank, just as an example, to go into other countries that want to borrow money from the World Bank. And when they borrow money, when country borrows money, the World Bank has been laying down conditions upon which it would loan the money. For instance, if a country wanted a $1 billion loan, they would say, fine, but you need to remove all of your agricultural tariffs and allow for imports to come into your country, so that we can sell to you and so that you, of course, can sell to countries outside of your country. The net effect of this has been the destruction of the local agricultural industries in countless number of smaller countries around the world. A good example is Honduras, which used to be called the breadbasket of South America. Honduras is now painfully starving to death. And they're in a position now where they actually import over 80% of the rice that they consume.
Well, you know, I think people have to understand that what we do is we insist on countries taking down their trade tariffs, and then, of course, we allow our industry to export there, but we subsidize our industry. We subsidize the corn growing. We subsidize so many of these other things. So the local people, the poor little farmer there in Honduras or Mexico, can't possibly compete with us. And, of course, then he goes out of business or simply, in the case of the Mexicans, they have to come north of the border. We put them in that position in the name of free trade and NAFTA.
That's exactly right. And the World Bank, I have to say, has been the rattlesnake in the woodpile, in my opinion, along with the IMF, the International Monetary Fund.
In fact, that's what Joseph Stiglitz, who's a Nobel Prize-winning economist, has said. The World Bank and the IMF, both of which are totally controlled by the United States elite, the elite who control our government, the World Bank and the IMF, every time they go into a country, matters get worse.
Well, a World Bank working paper was surfaced from June 2007, Dr. Stan, that was written about the Philippines. Of course, the World Bank is intimately involved with the Philippines they're poor, yet they've got some money, but they've got problems. So the World Bank has lent a lot of money to the Philippines over the years. This 2007 paper, this is just a recent policy, but this goes back 25, 30 years. This working paper said that the government of the Philippines shouldn't stockpile grain to stabilize prices, quote unquote. And what they have done over a period of time is take away all the mechanisms that governments had in place that might tend to stabilize prices, which governments were in the business of doing, by the way, for decades and decades and decades. That's because prices do go up and down from the time of the harvest to the middle of winter and so on. Governments have long been in the practice of putting storage of grains and foodstuffs so that they could meter those out when, you know, during the winter times and stuff when there wasn't so much supply around, and keep prices stable. Well, the World Bank has a concerted effort to remove those stabilization barriers that countries have thrown up. The result of the policy of rising prices we see today, Dr. Stan, is that they have been successful in removing those stabilization mechanisms. And so now they're in control not only of the supply, they're in control of the pricing mechanism as well.
And of course, at one time we had abundant supplies of food here in the United States. We had a 3-year supply of wheat. We do not have the supplies of wheat or the other staples even here in the United States. And if there were difficulty with any of the crops, any of the harvests, why, we could see famine in America. And people say, that's ridiculous. Well, of course, if you believe the Bible, you know that there's going to be tremendous famines, and all you need to do is read the recipe. It's all there. And of course, we see this is being actually encouraged and promoted by people at the highest levels of our government. And there really are no food stores throughout the world. And all we need would be, you know, a few more storms and droughts and some more wheat and rust and things that would impede the rice harvest. And we would see mass starvation in the world.
We're beginning probably on just the leading edge of that right now. I think some countries, already people that were formerly employed even just a few months ago are now migrating to the cities, ending up as beggars and on government doles and looking for missions that will feed them. It's not unusual for some countries, some people in Africa now, they're surviving on 2 or 3 tablespoons of rice a day. This is so wrong and it's so evil that it's inconceivable that it could happen. But again, like you said, we shouldn't be surprised, but here it is upon us now like a vengeance. And what people need to understand is that this is not just some random happenstance and, oh gee, we weren't too lucky this year, food prices went up another 50%. These people have, the global elite have been after control of the food supply in the world for well over 35 years. And they have worked at it methodically through groups like the World Bank, through the IMF, through other international aid organizations. They've been working on this, Dr. Stan. And at this point, as of today, I would have to say that they are in virtual absolute control of the world food supply. And this is not only, I mean, this is beyond bad. This is catastrophic to the people of the world because millions of people could die within even just a year because of these, faulty policies or failed policies from our point of view anyway, failed. And there's nothing in sight and there's nobody, apparently, there's nobody really looking at these issues from a historical perspective to see how we got here.
Well, Patrick, I really think that we're dealing with some very, very smart people who know exactly what they're doing. But, of course, whenever there's a crisis, they always say, oh, shucks, we had no idea. I think they know exactly what was going to happen. But, of course, they have to use that excuse because the alternative to tell the truth would be too painful, that there really is a genocidal population control agenda out there, and they really do, in my estimation, intend to kill off a large part of the world's population. And people say, nobody would want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I would say, well, you ought to read what Jacques Cousteau said. You ought to go to see the Georgia Guidestones back in Elberton, Georgia. You ought to read what, of course, a lot of the things they're saying at these major meetings, or go up on the Internet and type in on population control, and you'll find out they have an aggressive program to control the world population, including putting something in our water that will make us infertile, including the marriage tax, including abortion, including encouraging homosexuality and lesbianism. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the public to know. But famine is such an effective means of killing literally millions of people. That and war and new diseases.
Exactly. And, we have to bring into this discussion as well the issue of genetically modified organisms, in particular with terms of agriculture, crops, seeds, like like canola and corn and cotton and so on.
And soybeans, yeah. In fact, what's your opinion of these genetically modified foods? The government says they're perfectly safe. Why, of course, they, you know, Monsanto and the people who created the seeds say they're safe, so they must be safe. They wouldn't lie, would they?
Well, here's the case in point that ties into what I just said a few minutes ago. Monsanto controls 90% of the GMO market worldwide. 90%. They have methodically bought up virtually all of the seed companies in the last that they could get their hands on in the last 12 years, to the point now where they own these companies. They patented the seeds. They have created genetically modified seeds to replace the native seeds that have been grown for thousands of years. And they're trying to move these seeds into every country around the world. Now, there's been a lot of resistance in Europe and other countries. They say, no way, we don't want your GMO seeds. They call them Franken seeds.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Patrick Wood of the August Review. Go right ahead, Patrick. You were just saying that they call them Franken seeds, and I understand why.
Opponents call them Franken seeds, but Monsanto having a 90% monopoly over genetically modified seeds in the world, a story just appeared, of all places, in Chicago Tribune. It meant a lot to me. It probably didn't mean a lot to most readers, but the title, Dr. Stan, says, U.S. is using food crisis to boost bioengineered crops. Well, that caught my attention, and it's not a very long article, but I looked down into it, and here's what it says. The Bush administration has slipped a controversial ingredient into the $770 million aid package it recently proposed to ease the world food crisis, adding language that it would promote the use of genetically modified crops in food-deprived countries. So what they're doing is they're using the food price crisis to shove GMO crops and seeds down the throats of the hungry people who are begging for anything to put in their stomach. And you see, this is the government being complicit with Monsanto, because Monsanto owns this market. And Monsanto has a lobby in Washington that's the second to none. Half the people in the FDA and the people who actually control agriculture in our government are former employees of Monsanto, and high-level employees at that. So their policies have become the U.S. policy, where they can get the Bush administration to use this crisis to do what they could never do on their own, that is, convince the country this stuff is good for them. And so they're using this to make the final push, if you will, to put GMO food all over the world, whether they wanted it or not. Beggars can't be choosers, if you understand what I'm saying.
But of course, Patrick, why the Monsanto and the FDA says that these genetically modified foods, certainly they're more resistant to disease. Certainly, you can actually spray them with Roundup. Prevent insect infections of them. And they insist that they're perfectly safe. They're just like any other food. They've just been modified to grow more efficiently. How do you respond to that?
Well, of course, we know that that's a fraud. It's a blatant fraud. It's as blatant a fraud as is global warming, as espoused by Al Gore and his crowd. There recently was a petition that was in the news again, where some 15,000 scientists, 9,000 of whom are PhD scientists involved in climatology and weather change and so on, earth sciences, if you will, that flat out state that global warming is a fraud, and that there is certainly no scientific consensus that, according to Al Gore, for instance, says that it's a fact that there's total consensus throughout the world, the scientific world, that global warming is a fact. Well, there's at least 9,000 PhDs plus another however many thousand of lay scientists who have signed on to this petition saying that global warming is a fraud. When presented, when the Gore crowd was presented recently with this for comment, they refused to comment. And of course, they can have no comment, Dr. Stan. All they can do is shut up and turn the other way. they can put their fingers in their ear and just make like you didn't exist, and maybe you will go away.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Patrick Wood of the August Review, talking about what's really going on in the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Patrick was just saying, talking about the genetically modified foods. They call them in Europe Frankenfoods, and they will not allow them in there. They know, of course, what the studies show. The Americans don't understand that they've modified these foods. They've changed them totally. They put all sorts of genes in there, spider genes and antibiotic resistant genes and all sorts of terrible, terrible things that can affect your life, and certainly whether you know you're eating these things or not. I mean, not at least 70% of our corn is genetically modified, and of course we know that certainly in animals it produces fertility, and that's of course one of the things that the establishment really wants is fertile, infertile people. And of course we know that many of the animals that produce infertility, it produces all sorts of physical problems with the people who eat these foods. And certainly we have the animal studies that show they aren't safe, but it's all being concealed from the American people as the great experiment is unfolding. And anything you have that has corn in it, or soybeans, or canola, or cottonseed oil, or these all, of course, if it's genetically modified, and so many of the other products that we're eating, a massive experiment on the American people. Well, we've seen their experiments in the past when they put MTBE in our gasoline. We saw the experiment and the boys who went to Vietnam when we sprayed them with Agent Orange, and so many of them came down with cancer and infertility, and of course they're experimenting on us again. And the American people aren't allowed to know because of the control of the media. So pick up the story there, Patrick.
Well, the reason that Monsanto has gotten away from escaping the control of our food safety mechanism in Washington is that they have been successful at declaring these GMO crops to be substantially equivalent to the non-GMO crop that's replacing. So GMO corn is, they say, is equivalent to non-GMO corn. Therefore, it does not require regulation by the FDA or the Agricultural Department, and so on. So they have completely circumvented all of the testing mechanism that should be in place for these things, because they're not equivalent, as you noticed. They're obviously, even a fool would look at it and say, well, there's no way it could be equivalent. They're genetically different. So how could they be equivalent if they're genetically different? Yet, they have escaped all of the regulatory processes by getting it so declared, and this is because the people that are in the regulatory positions come from companies like Monsanto, and in particular, Monsanto itself.
And we have the finest bureaucrats that money could buy, and of course they're endangering the lives of everyone who's out there listening to this program.
Exactly so.
In fact, those of you who haven't read Jeffrey Green's book, Seeds of Destruction, we have an excellent four-tape set on this subject, and Jeffrey Smith, Seeds of Destruction, Seeds of Deception. So they're available through Radio Liberty. You need to get this. Seeds of Deception, and that's Jeffrey Smith. Go right ahead, Patrick.
Both excellent works, by the way. I was, when I first ran across those some time ago, I was just absolutely shocked. And I learned a lot in a short period of time. It gave me a great big headache, but in kind of a good way. I needed to know these things. But we started out talking about the economic crisis, or the crisis that's going on with rising food prices. And what I wanted to bring out to your listeners is that this is not an accidental policy. These are policies that were set in place decades ago. They've been working these policies methodically, silently in many cases, persistently. You got to give them credit for that. They are persistent. And over a period of years, they have used the World Bank and the IMF to break down the national barriers that protected the hungry, that fed the people within countries. They've broken these things down. They have subverted the land in many cases to grow other things other than food. For instance, we're now growing ethanol. Instead of, you know, feeding somebody with that corn, of course, it's GMO crops that produce the ethanol. And in many other countries where the barriers were brought down, they have been talked into growing other crops for export that had nothing to do with feeding people as well. So some of that land got diverted away from food-producing purposes. The result has been that these large distribution companies have created an oligarchy that sit on top of the entire food supply throughout the world. And they're flat out, they're yanking our chain right now. That's my personal opinion, and I think the facts bear it up. They're snapping the trap shut that they have been patiently building for the last 35 years. And we haven't seen it snap shut yet, but where prices are headed, both in energy as well as in food stuff right now, we may not see the end of this for another 3 or 4 years.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead, Patrick.
Well, there's a lot of hungry people out there getting ready to even to eat dinner this evening. And whatever you put on your plate tonight, chances are it's going to cost you about 30%, 30, maybe even 40% more than what it cost you 12 months ago. We've got these multiple factors like this working against us at the same time. We have, for instance, the economy is going down the tubes right now, which means that income and assets are less readily available to people. But at the same time that we're seeing energy prices go through the roof with $4 gasoline on the horizon, they say there's no end in sight. Oil hit a new high today, $133 a barrel.
$133 a barrel?
Oh, it's just, it's unbelievable what's going on.
Okay, go ahead.
It's out of control. And we see this happening with food, prices going up 20-30%. And I want to say, Dr. Standis, I think this is important to understand. These price increases are not, they're not due to what we would traditionally think of as inflation. They're, in other words, it's not the natural effect of inflation or just increased money supply that these prices are going up. They're going up on a global basis, not just in our country, I might add, too. So everywhere around the world, in the respective currencies, the prices are going up by the same amount. It might be a little variance between countries, but basically it's all rising around the country world at the same time. These price increases, Dr. Stan, are a manipulated price increase, not an inflationary price increase. And people need to understand that, because all you hear from the Fed today is, well, it's supply and demand. It's, you know, it's, you know, inflationary pressures are at work here. This is so far from the truth, in my opinion, it's not even funny. The reason that these prices are skyrocketing is because the hot investment money that from all over the world is this global pool of slush fund, if you will, that invests in the latest and greatest thing, whatever it might be, as the financial industry is being squeezed in other parts of the world where this money is being squeezed out, it needs new homes, and as it moved around the world, it found gold for a while, gold and silver and precious metals. It found oil. It found wheat and rice and corn and commodities like that that are important for people. It found some of the other metals like copper and silver and so on. And this money has been, this big, huge fund of money has been fueling the speculative crisis.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Patrick was saying, of course, if you believe that supply and demand is what's going on, you probably believe the government's when they say we have a 2% inflation, or maybe a 4% inflation. Look at what's happening at, you know, the grocery store. Look at what's happening to the price of oil, as Patrick was just pointing out. Oil hit 130 $3 a barrel today, $133 a barrel. And, of course, you're going to look back on this as the good old times, I suspect, I fear. And, of course, Patrick's simply pointing out that most of what's going on today, is, as far as the rising prices of food is worldwide, has to do with the speculators and these people with the hedge funds and all this money, and they're actually creating rising prices. And, of course, they have tremendous amounts of money. It's all paper money. It's all been created out of nothing. But they've accumulated a lot of it. And now, of course, they can manipulate things, and they can accumulate more. But, of course, one of the things is the dollar is falling. So many of the world currencies are falling. Our whole world monetary system is on the edge of an abyss, and the average individual has no idea what's going on, because Henry Paulson, Secretary of the Treasury, who gave up a job that paid him $40 million a year to take a government job at $180,000 a year, Henry Paulson tells us that we're almost at the bottom and things are going to turn around, and if you believe that, why, well, you deserve what you're going to get. Go ahead, pick the story up there, Patrick.
I suppose you just kind of got me into I have to make a comment on Henry Paulson.
All right, go right ahead. Before you do, let's
I don't know if it has anything to do with what we're talking about, but I have to comment because
all right, go ahead.
He's one of my favorite targets. When Henry Paulson came to be Treasury Secretary of the Treasury when he was appointed, you remember that the Secretary of Treasury before him was John Snow.
Right.
And John Snow was, as far as the elite was concerned, was doing a fine job. That's not me talking, okay? I'm saying he was, you look at him and say, well, it's business as usual. The global elite is getting everything it wants with John Snow. And, you know, you figure, well, who else would you expect? John Snow up and resigned one day for no particular reason. He had no health issues. He had no crisis. There wasn't a sex scandal or anything like that. But he just up and resigned. And at the same time, within about a day, President Bush, I almost call him Governor Bush, President Bush appointed Henry Paulson to be the new Secretary of Treasury. And Paulson, of course, comes from Goldman Sachs, where he's the CEO for several years. And Henry Paulson was the guy who opened up China. He had, as a global banker, he had more trips to China in his 20-plus career at Goldman Sachs than any other investment banker in Wall Street. He was Mr. China, and he brokered more deals, put together more deals than probably everybody else combined. And so when he left this huge, high-paying job at Goldman Sachs to be a puny Secretary of the Treasury for just a few $100,000, you just knew something had to be fishy. You just knew it. I mean, nobody does that. I mean, you know, I don't make much money, but I wouldn't quit. I wouldn't quit what I'm doing now to make, you know, one-tenth or one 100th of what I was making before, just for public, you know, just to serve the public. Well,
you are serving the public. What you're doing is trying to warn the public, as I am. Go ahead.
Well, I know. Yeah, Paulson was getting ready to service the public.
I think service is more than
not serve them, but service them.
Right.
So what the immediate thought that I had about Henry Paulson was, is that he, as a heavyweight, was brought in to preside over the crises that they knew was coming. In other words, he was going to be the keeper of the marbles, if you will, while the American economy and the global economy came unglued, because he is their direct representative. He's like, you know, right at the top of the food chain. And to put Henry Paulson in at Treasury is to appoint the head wolf to be in charge of the chicken coop.
And I pity those poor old chickens. Before we go on, Patrick, I would really like you to get out your webpage and help people get in touch with you in August Review, because Patrick's material is excellent. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, so much for Henry Paulson. I think, you know, I said that back then. I wrote that back then. I think I've mentioned it to you before. And just in passing, I said there's something more to why Henry Paulson is now in that position versus Jon Snow. They wanted the heavyweight there, who could pull the strings and, you know, more or less protect the assets of the bank. You know what I mean? To kind of make sure that the Wall Street establishment, the global elite bankers and so on, that their interests are protected as the whole system comes unglued. Now today we're seeing the whole system come unglued.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think people have to understand that we're just on the edge of this precipice. I mean, certainly prices are going up, wages are not going up commensurate with it. People are being laid off all over the country, and of course, certainly we're seeing a contraction of our manufacturing, more and more of our jobs moving overseas. Yes, we are still a major manufacturer, but of course we're employing fewer and fewer people, and of course more and more of our industries are moving to other countries where labor, if they're labor intensive, where labor is cheaper, or if they're energy dependent, let's imagine that they need electricity. They're going to other countries where you get electricity a lot cheaper than we do here, because they intensely run up the price of electricity, just as they're intensely running up the price of natural gas and running up the price of oil, all done intensely to impoverish our people and of course to lower their living standards. Go ahead, Patrick.
Well, impoverishing is the means to the end of control. It's about control over nations and people and populations. Whether they be rich or poor, there's no distinction between rich or poor in the eyes of the global elite. They would just as soon preside over 100 million blacks in Africa as they would 100 million whites in America. And so it's about control. And of the ways to control people in this world, energy is one. If you control the energy, you certainly can control the people. If you control food, you certainly can control people. If you control the monetary system, you certainly can control people, because they can't buy and sell without it. And the only thing that I have left, two things that I've left out is, and they're working on this right now, if you can control the water, you also can control people. And lastly, if you could control the air, you can control people. And we're seeing fronts on both fronts there, with oil and with water and with air. Global warming is about controlling the air. It's about controlling the air. And, so we see these people operating in all of these chokehold areas. You don't see them operating in areas, that are immaterial, for instance, like lawnmower manufacturers. Well, who cares about mowing your lawn? You don't see them operating in pavement companies or just construction companies. There's no control there. You see them operating in the industries where, if they can control the industry, they can control the population who's served by that industry. Agriculture is key to these people. It has been for decades. Energy is key to these people. It has been for decades. Money is key to these people. It has been for decades. And we're seeing these traps, all of these traps, Dr. Stan, at the same time are being sprung. Is it possible that we could have, just at random, so many crises at the same time? Is it even conceivable that these could all happen at the very same time? I don't see how it's conceivable. We've had energy crises before, independent of anything else. But today we see monetary crisis, we see food crisis, we see energy crisis, we see air crisis, even though that's obviously phony. Al Gore continues to tell us, oh my gosh, we're all going to die if we don't do something about it tomorrow. If they are successful, they're going to have control over the people in the world, and the people will have nothing to say about it.
I think you're absolutely right. And of course, that's for global warming. The whole idea is more government control. Cutting back on the utilization of electricity, cutting back on our utilization of power, our utilization of our cars, to get us out of our cars, to get us onto bicycles. And after all, wouldn't that be a lot healthier for us if we were just riding our bicycles like the people in Beijing used to? Weren't they healthy people, living under the communist regime? And, of course, if we were to pass the Kyoto Protocol, we would have to cut back. You probably know the figures better than I do, but it's, 60 to 80% of our energy production in this country, and, of course, would return to the situation we were back at the beginning of the 19th century. I mean, we would simply impoverish our people and shut down our manufacturing, and our manufacturing would have to go overseas because it wouldn't have the power to be able to operate. Power is the key to industrialized society, and that's what it's all about. They want to deindustrialize our nation. People say that's crazy talk. Well, it's not crazy talk, it's what's going on. But the people who are advocating this, these people of great wealth, have a different agenda. The Al Gores of this world who want their own private jets and their big SUVs and their big mansions, but they don't want us to have any of the luxuries of life.
That's right. And, oh, by the way, let me point out, of course, Al Gore has been closely associated with the Trilateral Commission
sure.
for years and years. A loyal member, if you will, along with Bill Clinton and the Dick Cheneys of the world. There's not very many people from America who are from the American contingent of this Trilateral Commission, about 130, 140. And yet we see that these people are the movers and shakers in virtually every area of policy that we have in our nation. And the same thing is true in European nations and also in Asian nations now as well. That is, the members that are from those countries have an undue influence over the governments in those areas as well. And they basically have the governments doing their bidding to create the new international economic order.
And I think it's so important that people understand that this is where Dick Cheney came from, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission. And when, of course, he became the vice president, first of all, he got a deferred salary from Halliburton. What's a deferred salary? Why would Halliburton be paying a Dick Cheney after he became the vice president, unless they expected to get something in return? And, of course, Dick Cheney's seat on the Trilateral Commission was taken up by none other than Lynn Cheney. Go right ahead. His wife. Go ahead.
That's right. That's just absolutely
These crazy. People give incest a bad name, really.
Exactly. And speaking of the CFR, I know we have a couple of minutes left here. I watch the Council on Foreign Relations pretty closely, as I know you do as well, just to see what they're up to, what they're talking about, and what they're thinking, because often that's where you see policy first appear. And there was a speech, Dr. Stan, just about from a week ago. It was from actually May 12 and 13, not too, it was just a couple weeks ago. Well, a week ago, actually. May 2008, of course, where Dr. Ben Stile, the senior fellow at the CFR and also the director of international economics of the Council on Foreign Relations, Dr. Stile gave a speech which I think will go down in history as a bellwether speech, change in policy directions. He actually talks about the reintroduction of gold into the monetary mechanisms of the world.
In fact, I've been expecting that for a long time.
I have too.
Did they talk about this being issued by a private concern, or who's going to issue the new currency?
That's right, and I've been watching for this. In fact, I think you and I have had a conversation about where is the gold in the world today.
Right.
You know, we've been wondering, the central banks have been selling it. We've wondered, okay, well, who's been buying these, 400-ounce bars of pure, 9999%, whatever, gold. And, we look at it, never really been able to trace it. We know where it isn't. But we haven't really known where it is. And so Dr. Stein, in his speech, I need to read the thing three or four more times to just let it sink in. But during the course of his speech, he's talking about gold being a stable item that is more stable than the dollar, the euro, et cetera. And so right in the middle of his speech, he says, so how could gold make a revival as a sort of international money? Well, we don't actually need a government-run gold standard anymore. There are already private gold banks. They've been growing for some time.
He must be talking about the exchange-traded funds.
Well, he's talking about using gold credits, like a credit card that would be, measured instead of dollars, the flakes of gold, where you actually, your bank, your account is convertible into hard gold. And it says their growth, that is the gold banks, has roughly charted the decline of the dollar. So it says people buy shares in digital gold. Well, that's all fine and good. He says, where's the gold? The gold is held in vaults by these banks, these gold banks. Now, these are different than commercial banks we have today. There is actually a class of company out there called a gold bank. And they do business with on an international basis between major banks and countries as well, and central banks, to move gold back and forth. These gold banks, Dr. Stan, unquestionably are controlled by the global elite that would someday hope to completely dominate with lockstep control the world monetary supply.
And because I really think that's why they intend to destroy the value of the dollar, and the people will be desperate. I mean, they've lost everything, they have nothing. They've got to have a stable currency. And without a stable currency, society can't go on, and they're already there with a solution.
They're just waiting for a solution. I see this as the trial balloon, if you will, that I think this is the first for anybody associated with the CFR to come out with a concept like this. I think it's a trial balloon, and I think it tells you exactly what's on their mind. These people have been maneuvering behind the scenes to get control of the world's gold and to move it into these private gold banks where it's ready, willing, and able to become the new monetary system of the world.
There was an article sometime, the first half of last year, that basically said the same thing. What we need is a gold-backed currency that is privately issued, not government-issued, but privately issued. After all, we can't trust government. They've been irresponsible. But if we have private people, the elite, were to issue the money, then we'd be so much safer, wouldn't we?
That's right. Well, fortunately for David Rockefeller, you've got plenty of progeny so that when he passes someday soon, plenty of his descendants to pick up the pieces, so to speak, and continue on with the monopoly.
And of course, the Rockefeller family has been actually, according to Dr. Cuddy, has been actually buying up the gold overseas. Our gold is sold overseas. It's sold. Why would we sell our gold overseas? Why, so the Rockefellers and their friends could buy it up over there in preparation for the coming economic collapse. But they have a solution. They're always so far ahead of us.
They always do.
Anyway, our guest has been Patrick Wood. Once again, Patrick Wood, how can people get in touch with you?
www.augustreview.com.
www.augustreview.com. An excellent source of information. We're going to be back in just a moment. You hang on there, Patrick, and we're going to be wrapping up today's program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Patrick, do you have that article electronically? How could I'd love to get a copy of that?
I'll tell you what, Dr. Stan, I will send you the link to the resource so that you can check it out.
I would really appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I haven't seen any articles on it. I have the transcript and the audio of Dr. Stiles' speech. Haven't seen any comment on it any other than that anywhere in the press whatsoever. I wouldn't expect to see it either, I guess, but it's there.
Well, because this is just for the elite. In other words, these people, when they give their talks, if they're important, they're not picked up on the media, but they want the other members, the elite, and what most people do not understand. In fact, I suspect even many members of the Council on Foreign Relations don't understand is this organization was created as a front for another organization. Back in 1921, when the CFR was created, it was a front for the American Roundtable Group, which was the front for the Association of Helpers, which was the front for Cecil Rhodes Secret Society. And as you well know, that whole story is told by Professor Carol Quigley, the eminent liberal historian who wrote Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time.
Yes, indeed.
Well, you've got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, all I can say is the crises that are happening in the world today are not just coincidental. They're, in my estimation, they're being allowed, or if not orchestrated, to occur at roughly the same time. Our world is being thrown into chaos because of it. Energy crisis, monetary crisis, agriculture crisis, air crisis, and so on. All these crises are coming at us so that the so-called crisis managers in the global elite can offer solutions that we would not have otherwise accepted, that we will now beg them to come in and save us from these catastrophes.
And I think there's nothing worse that can happen to a nation than the collapse of their currency. And yet, of course, we see the dollar collapsing. And all we would need to be would be a major incident and the other countries in the world to say, we're not going to support your currency anymore. We're not going to buy your debt. You can't keep borrowing $2.5 billion every day indefinitely before, with a falling dollar, before somebody finally says, we don't want to play your game. And when that happens, why, the game is over. And
the game is
over. I think that the average individual who is out there in our society has no idea what's going, going to happen. And when it does, it's going to come just as it did for the Argentine people back in about 2000, 2001. They woke up one morning and they lost 75% of their entire life savings. Well, Patrick, it's so good to have you with us. I hope we can get you on our other programs real soon. I want to bring out that fact you brought out. That's so important.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I appreciate your offer to me.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is the time we need to remind all of our leaders, all of our listeners, that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help to do what we do to maintain our network of almost, well, now over 60 outlets of one sort or another every single week. But we're reaching an awful lot of people, but frankly, we need your help. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, because many of the radio ministries such as ours are in a squeeze, and we were doing pretty well until last month when we began to feel the squeeze as well. So if you can help, they're in a position to help, why give us a call. And then, of course, we certainly want to suggest if you do not understand what's happening financially, you need to read my syllabus on the financial tsunami. It comes with a talk. It's available on DVD or VHS. The financial tsunami. And you need to understand that we are on the edge of a financial precipice unparalleled during our lifetimes. So, and then of course we carry the wonderful book entitled The Creature from Jekyll Island. We have two little pamphlets. One is The Financial Meltdown. The other is The History of Money. They're inexpensive, two pamphlets, but they'll give you tremendous background, a tremendous understanding of what's happened time and time and time and time again throughout history, whether it was ancient Greece or ancient Rome or Florence or Venice or certainly the time of the French Revolution, before the French Revolution, after the French Revolution, here in America, at the time of the American Revolution. And the history of money is important that you understand so that you can begin to prepare yourself and be in a defensive position. Because those who do not make preparations, I'm afraid, are going to lose everything they spent their whole life trying to accumulate. So again, the pamphlets, The History of Money, Financial Meltdown, The Creature from Jekyll Island, the classic book on what's going on financially, and then my talk on the financial tsunami, and the syllabus goes with that. Also important to prepare yourself for what lies ahead. To put things into a spiritual perspective, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or watch the DVD by that title or the video. And then, of course, you need to get the talk we gave on the forbidden secret, and the syllabus that goes with that. You need to get the talk on the planned police state, and the syllabus goes with that, because actually we actually take some of the writings that come from the dark side, and they will tell you how they're influenced in the financial policies of what's going on. They have people working within the financial system to further their goal of the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader. So, again, the number 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you have not yet laid in a supply of emergency food and you need a catalog, you give us a call. We'll be glad to send you the catalog from Ready Reserve Food, our telephone number 1-800-544-8927. If you, of course, need the information on sheltering in place, how you would prepare your home in case of a chemical, biological, or neurological attack. And, of course, nobody's going to tell you what to do. And everybody's going to be looking after themselves. But if you watch the DVD, you can lay in the things that you're going to need to protect yourself and your family. That's the DVD, Sheltering in Place. We have a four-tape set on, certainly on civil defense. We have a book put out by the government some years ago, nuclear war survival skills, and I will mention that we are selling this all over the world, a sudden tremendous surge of interest in this book. Why? Because I think most people know that we're heading into a nuclear confrontation in the Middle East. It's only a matter of time. And then, of course, we have the book, Making the Best of Basics, an excellent introduction to how you would survive if you didn't have all the luxuries that we have readily available in America today. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our webpage at radioliberty.com, radioliberty.com. Read our letters. You can listen to our programs there 9 hours a day on the speed, or certainly the archive programs and MP3 programs 3 hours a day. And then please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. You're